Get ready to jump the boards and go behind the bench with the Anaheim Ducks coaching staff. From untold stories to the X's and the O's, we'll explore it all right here on Behind the Bench.
Well, Greg, congratulations. And I don't know how many people that you've met so far.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's been a whirlwind, but I'm going to introduce myself. My name's Guy Hebert.
Yeah, I know you are.
The original Mighty Duck.
A quick fact, Frenchie, you might not know this. So we're NESCAC guys. I went to Hamilton.
That's right. And I played
against you.
Really?
You're probably your senior. I went back through all the stats of your career, and I think your senior year I was a freshman at Hamilton.
Wow.
And so we must have played against each other then, and I think you were an assistant coach next year. So you probably coached against me there.
Wow.
And then, of course, our careers were pretty comparable where I'm sure you were trying to say, you know, beat them high glove. or five-hole then, right?
More importantly, we're both smart.
Yes, that's right.
And we played in crappy arenas.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. So true. Well, Greg, thanks for doing this. It's been a busy, busy morning, and I'm sure it'll continue to get busier, but we're so glad to have you here in Anaheim. And I just want to kick this thing off by being an East Coast guy. What's it like? Well, the sun's not out yet. We promise the sun comes out here. It does. But being able to walk out of the rink with shorts and flip-flops on, what's that going to be like for you?
Well, totally different. We used to joke around about that when you'd fly from Toronto when you're freezing your rear end off, right? And you go to the West Coast, guys look forward to that. You would know that, right? Okay. But I actually have relatives here. My late mother's brother had moved out here. He played hockey at Michigan State.
Okay.
And for Amo Bassoni, who's a legend.
Yep.
And he had moved out here sometime in the late 70s. My brother's ex-wife, her family lives in Irvine.
Okay.
So I've been coming out here quite a bit, and you'll hear about this. I surf a lot.
You do?
Yes.
Wait, so how do you surf a lot?
Well, I was in coaching the Islanders.
Okay.
I used to run the beaches in Long Island.
Yeah.
And I would see these. I like the ocean. I've always been fascinated by the ocean. And we joke around. In Boston, there's no waves in Boston Harbor. It's a well-protected harbor.
That's why I was wondering how the heck you're surfing. Yeah.
So I figured it out when I was in Long Island. And I would run the beaches, and there's a real strong surfing culture in Long Island. It starts in, like, believe it or not, the Rockaways, Breezy Point in Brooklyn, all the way to Long Beach to Montauk. And, you know, California and Hawaii get the rep for the surfers,
sure.
But they're very proud down there. So I would just ask guys, how you do this? You know, I wonder how you do it. And I bought a Hobie slug, 10-foot Hobie slug. It was about 5 inches thick. You could have put a car on it, okay? So you need to float, right?
Yeah.
So I learned on that, and I just kept getting better. And then I've been all over the world surfing. I've surfed in Korea. I've surfed in Taiwan. I've surfed
Wait
in Peru.
Wait a second. Yeah. Really?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, would you have been a pro surfer instead of a hockey coach?
No, I mean, come on. I started late. And, Paul Kariya and I surfed together.
I was going to ask you because he's the man at Dana Point.
Yes, he is. Yeah. So we both get into stand-up paddleboarding without talking about it. I just like the exercise behind it.
Yeah.
And there's a crew up in L.A., the Blakes and the Chelios was up there. And I think Murray, those guys are up there. They paddleboard. I don't know them. I don't surf with them. But I get into that because it's more of a full-body exercise.
Yeah.
But I was actually out with Paul a couple weeks ago in San Onofre.
Okay.
We had some head-high waves, and I was in Hawaii last summer in July when they had a code red swell.
It
was
nice.
30-foot bombs came in.
Yeah.
So I tapped out at about 15.
Jesus. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Better surfer, you or Korea?
They were asking me that. He's better. He's got more time in his hands, right?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. At least we think so. That's his teammate right
now. Yeah.
Teammate.
Listen, we can barely get him out for dinner. So if you can get him out on the surfboard, that's probably the only way you can get Paul out.
Well, that's
out
why
anywhere.
He's not at dinner. He's out surfing.
Yeah. Some things never change. That's for sure.
They never change.
Well, so you're certainly comfortable here in Orange County, so that's great. But take us through a little bit of the process. You know, obviously it's time-consuming. It's stressful. You just don't know how it's going to end up. I mean, I asked Pat this, and I said, was there any particular moment where you guys were just having a conversation and you said to yourself, this is my guy? You know, like, this is my guy. And he said, well, he holds his cards pretty close to the vest. But he just said that he just had that kind of, instant rapport with you that he just, he felt it was so comfortable. And then as he dove into, the X and O's of hockey and your ability to coach and really, I thought the biggest thing was that you were able to translate from almost decade to decade in hockey, being able to, listen, these kids today are a different group than when I played, right? So to be able to manage these guys is certainly a skill. And I think that was one of the things he was most impressed about. You know, was there any particular point in time where you said, like, this is such a great fit for me, like, I just know I have this job?
I didn't. Because he does what you did. He keeps his cards close to his chest. And I want to honor the process, so I wasn't woodpeckering anybody to find out.
Yeah,
I'm a big believer, like, do the best you can and let the results speak for themselves. And I knew that the interviews, as I alluded to in the press conference, went really well. Like, you know, when you talk to somebody, it can be a perfect stranger. There's an energy and there's a chemistry that you can't manufacture. It just comes naturally. And I mean this sincerely. Like, I didn't, you know, I remember coaching against Pat and how much of a fireball he was on the ice. But I had never had contact with him. And I've been doing this for a long time, so you're always like one person away from 10 people, right?
Yeah.
Because that one person knows 10 people that'll help you open the door. Nobody was in that metric for me that knew Pat except for Craig Billington that I knew.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's great to know somebody, but you can't push people on people, right? So once you do meet them, that critical intersection between like and not dislike, but not like as much, has to be executed, right? And some guys are old school, like, and you bring it a good point up, Guy. Like, I've been coaching since the 80s, right? So that's 5 decades I've been involved in coaching kids. And the one guy that was able to take athletic skills and integrate him into a hockey player was this Grant Stenbrook that was at Maine. And I played football, hockey, baseball. I did golf because I caddied at golf courses, take the bus down there and caddy.
You know, he'll get you on, and that's a couple nice courses out here.
Yeah.
So,
and I know John Aulis is a good golfer, too. So, but, and then everybody in my neighborhood was boxing. It was just kind of the thing you did in an Irish Catholic neighborhood, right? And Grant was able to take things that weren't specifically for boxing or football and then marry him into a hockey, say a defensive posture. So when I worked at Maine, he was showing things, and Paul knows this, and all those great players that came through Maine, Grant was like the guru. So he would share things that might be out of the box things that you never heard before.
Yeah.
And but they worked. So I've tried to perfect them and adapt to the players' heights and size to make them weapons. And I shared it with Pat because some guys were like, this is BS. This is like reinventing the wheel crap. The game's not that complicated. But I know it works because it's worked everywhere I went. If you talk to Zdeno Chara, he would say he helped me do this, whether it was footwork, quiet from the nipples down to the knees, Scott Pelich or Adam Pelich, I mean. He would say, yeah, he helped me do this. So there are certain things that I knew when all the way back to Grant that work in a modern athlete. And Pat, who played a long time, was like, I never really thought about that. So I was just fortunate to be around people who taught me at a young age, and I was able to, like I said, kind of adapt and manipulate some of those things into a communication, then a demonstration that made sense to the athlete. And I'll give an example. I showed Pat, so Alex Galchenyuk.
Okay.
Top 3 pick on the draft. The Avs took him, you know, hurting for you know, depth players. Galley has a good history of scoring.
Yep.
But they need a guy to play center on a third, fourth line in a defensive role. And he's a great guy. Really, do you know Galley at all?
I just know his reputation. Yeah.
So he's got a different guy.
Yeah.
Okay. But I generally liked him. So I was doing a drill with him. I said, fundamentally, this is what you need to do to defend in the defensive zone. And I was showing to Pat the video because we videotape practice, because when you can show the player in the practice, it just slows down.
That makes so much more sense to be able to do that.
Yes. So Galley was like, I don't know what you're talking about here. I said, well, if you're defending and you're a goalie, you know this. You never turn sideways to the shooter, right? You want to make yourself big.
Sure.
So the same width applies to a defenseman. You want to make yourself big. So when you stop, you want to get wide right away. So you want to get in the attack lane between the offensive player and the net. Same way you want to get in the shooting lane between the shooter and the net.
Yep.
Right? Same linear principles, right? Well, without getting through the mechanics of it, he couldn't do it. And we had in the video, which should have been 5 minutes. I swear to God, it was 20 minutes after practice.
Wow. Wow.
And Pat was looking at it, and it just, like I said, Belichick's thing. You know, you can't teach what you don't know. So he had never been told that. And then the light went on about, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks later. And he went from a guy, I said, don't talk to him about playing in the D zone to the coaches during the games. Because he came in, he was out for a bit at training camp, so he came right back to us. I said, don't bother him. Just let him play hockey. And then when we get a string of practice together, we'll go through this. And then once he goes through it, now you have a talking point.
Yep.
Gally, what are you doing? Remember we did this in practice?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I realized it right after it happened. Because he wanted to go, you know, and hit the guy and turn sideways. Well, if you miss the guy turning sideways, he's going past you and he's got a clean lane to the net.
Yep.
So just him coming back to the bench saying, I knew it right away. So now it started to click in his head. And then we have him do one-on-ones in open ice, one-on-ones in practice. And he's comfortable. So I was showing that to Pat, and it reinforced his thought that players can get coached to a higher level. So I'm not saying I'm super coach. This is a combination of other people around me that have actually reinforced that from players that I've talked to. I remember Brad Hunt. Yep. He played with the Avs this year. He's been around a while. Yep. Little guys. So little guys have to defend a little bit differently than big guys do because there's no forgiveness if they meet a guy. They can't reach around. They don't have the length. So their footwork is critical. And he had just never heard of that stuff before. So I think I've always teached it, and I don't measure what other people do. I had Luke Richardson with the Islanders, and Luke was a heck of a player, and a big, physical, strong, tough defenseman. And he taught me things about how he would engage a player that was going up the wall. And it was interesting listening to him, how he would, you know, the timing of him getting into a guy's elbows or hands. So I would learn things that would augment what I had thought were fundamentally had to be there to be a good defender.
I love everything you're saying. I mean, it makes sense to me. I mean, just listening to it. Now, the one thing that I asked Pat, and I want to ask you, you brought up coach the player or coach the person, not the player. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a powerful statement in today's sports world just or today's landscape in general. Why is that important to you, and how do you go about doing that to get to know the player or the person to be able to coach them as a player?
Well, it always starts with honesty. I always ask the player, who are you as a person? Like, you're not going to believe this. Some guys really don't know.
Yeah.
And if you ask them what's the first principle to do an exploration of yourself, because the hardest journey for a human is from their head to their heart. That's where honesty lives, right? It's kind of a goofy thing to say, but it's true.
Yeah.
Right?
Simple.
Right? So in that journey, there's a value system. There's authenticity. There's ethics. There's morals. Right, there's love, there's companionship, all these things that sometimes in a physical sport you just cringe when you hear love or compassion, but it's important in a locker room, right? So I asked the player without baiting him along with where are you in this, where are you with that. I asked him, who are you as a person?
Right between the eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who are you? And then they'll stumble out of the first, you know, 5 or 6 words. Well, what do you mean? I said, who are you? I'm a good guy. I'm a good teammate. I'm funny, I'm likable. Okay, that's great. But what's important to you? Like, what do you value? What values do you important? What values to you do you feel you naturally represent? And I'm telling you, they don't start with honesty. And we do it at the start of every season in the American League. I heard this from somebody else that told me this. A player had told me why he liked a certain coach.
Yeah.
It's because the player told me that before the season started, he asked me questions about me, my family, started with me, then my family, what I enjoy doing for activities. And I thought, I don't do that enough.
Yeah.
I do it on a reactionary basis, mm-hmm. but I'm going to start doing that. So I started. And just, I always say, I can only share my experiences in my life, right? I can only share that. I can't share what you went through as a 15-year-old kid growing up, wherever right. you grew up, or what you grew up in. Did we a Quebec guy?
No, Northern New York.
Northern New York.
Yeah.
So what you went through growing up in Northern
sure.
New York versus me being an Irish Catholic in Boston, right? Different world. So we're looking at life through a different prism, right?
Yeah.
So how do we make them merge and work together, right? So I do that deep dive into the person without being intimidating. I invite him to talk. And then when he tells me what he likes to do outside of that core value system, if he likes to fish, if he likes to golf, if he likes to surf, well, I know I can go to that as a neutral zone and talk to a player. And then that kind of calms him down, disarms him. So then you can actually correlate. So if you were doing this, which you really love outside of hockey, would you behave the same way you're doing in that exercise that you do on the ice? And then he already has the question's already been answered inside of his head before he opens his mouth. I think that's how you broaden that scope of that relationship.
Yep.
Well, and that breeds like respect. And French and I were talking about it before you came on. Is, you know, if you can have respect between the coach and the player, then you know what to expect. Like if coach expects me to do this, and even I've let in 6 goals, but he knows my preparation was there. Mm-hmm. I just didn't maybe execute at the level I needed to. Well, then the coach might say, you just had a kind of a bad night.
Right.
I know it wasn't part of that. But that goes a long way in the locker room with players. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a kind of a breath of fresh air where, you know, I think the players that we know that are already currently on this roster, I think that they're going to gravitate toward that because I think it's that, you know, it's just honest. It's just honest knowing what the coach expects from me. And if I don't give it to him, like you say, like I already know the answer. I know if I played up to that level or if my effort wasn't, you know, acceptable to myself, to my teammates, and then to my coaching staff. So, I think it's going to be tremendous for you to kind of have that. I don't know. I don't even know how to say it. It's like, it's just such a fresh start for all these guys, and I think that
it's like
you know,
a clean slate almost.
Yeah, yeah. And we talked to Pat about. I'm like, hey, it's a fresh start for rookies, the guys in the middle of their career, and then the guys at the end of their career, and that you know these guys are going to come to camp figuring that I've got a great chance to continue my career here with the Anaheim Ducks because I know I bring this to the table. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I love it. I wish some coach would have sat down with me back in the day because, I mean, it was a little more tough love, as Pat says, you know, when you play in the, you know, end of the 80s and into the 90s and beginning of the 2000s. I mean, it did start to change. I mean, like we said, it's got to be hard to be a mind reader, team psychologist, and parent to 21 players in that locker room.
Right. And that's why I don't – so my – probably my weakness is I can go overboard, okay, in trying to inform the players. I've learned to balance that out, too. I have no kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I was divorced like 12 years ago, and I live hockey, and I live sports. I live activities. I've always been a curious kid, and now I'm into this frontier where how do we get – so this is a little the mechanics of the American League. The Avalanche – never carried two extra skaters. So they were always on the screws, which meant that they might carry one, okay, like McDermott was this year.
Yep.
But we would have, say, NHL contracts. I don't know how many you're allowed to have and all this stuff, but we might have 3 guys that we're hoping to be with us all year. But as you know, people get injured. And those 3 guys are critical parts of your team. Right, they're the ones that are going to drive your team. The veterans like the Megnas, the Hunts, the Sherwoods. They're going to drive your team. But as soon as they get hurt, those guys go. So the other teams in the division who don't have that NHL fat, right, or do have that NHL fat, that the extra 4, the extra D, they're not going to have to dip into their second-line players to be first-line players and the East Coast League guys to come up as quickly as we do. So one of the things that we've had to do, and as you know, the Avalanche have been banged up. The only year they weren't banged up a lot was the year they won the Cup. The other years, they're always banged up. I've never seen it before. This year, we went through 54 players. My team did.
Insane.
49 skaters. So when I was showing Pat stuff, and he's like, because Pat, he's a workaholic. He knows all the players, all the teams, who's got more talent. And I was showing him games against San Diego, who actually had pretty good players, okay? I don't know what happened down there, but... And he knew my players. You got like 80 East Coast League players in this game. We did. He had remembered the game. And I said, so how do you – because I'm not into like, hey, I'm not going to have a pity party because we don't have a player. Like that's just a waste of time, right? Mm-hmm. So what do you do to create a competitive advantage without talent? And my big thing is like you have to live in a – and you can't just flirt with it. You got to live in a zone where psychologically you're designed to outcompete the other team, which is very easy to say, very easy to say. But it's, and I was talking about Belichick's comments. Mm-hmm. Well, it starts in practice. So there's an expectation that our players are going to have, when they walk on the ice for practice that's going to be promoted, okay? In the old days, it was beaten out of you. Now you promote it. You got to whack them every once in a while, but it's going to be promoted, and it's going to be a tribal thing. They're all invested. Because, like, my thing is, you know, the goalie's a little bit of a different animal, right?
But, oh, I know.
Right?
Oh, I know, yeah.
But he knows too well.
Yes. But if I'm playing a one-on-one and you're the defenseman and you're not going 100%, well, how am I going to get better?
Yep.
If you're not employing the tools and the skills we're giving you to defend properly, you're not going to get better. So John Tavares in New York, I remember watching practice once, and I saw there was a line. It was like a one-on-one. He was on one blue line, and the D were coming out the opposite corner, and they were surfing up to the middle ice and playing one-on-one, the basic one-on-one drill. And I was watching him manipulate the line.
Yeah.
He kept looking down the other end of the D for Travis Hamonic, who was our best defender. So what he was doing, he was putting himself in the line where he could go against Hamonic, because John Tavares wanted to go against the stiffest competition in practice. So a light went off in my head that, okay, if you could get all your players to think like him and all your defenders to defend like Hamonic, would you not get better as a group? It's
right.
Unequivocally obvious. Yep. You will.
Yep.
So I try to pass those messages on to our players, which they admire that. They like those stories, right? So that's the environment I want to create and practice.
Have you been able to, or how, I guess let me rephrase this, how do you incorporate this whole new world of analytics into your coaching? Is there a balance that you've been able to find?
Yep. I like analytics. Okay, it came out, Frank Gardner, who was the analytics godfather, started it when I was with the Islanders in 2000. And I went to the Islanders in 14 after the run with the Maple Leafs, and Frank came in there on like the 2010. And he was just like this real, I don't want to demean him, but he was this real different guy. Like this, sure. Where's this guy coming, this analytic BS, you know? What
yeah.
is all this crap?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
He is crunching numbers, and it hadn't really evolved yet. Like, I call them fingerprint analytics now. Like, you can tell them what you want, and they can bake that out so that you can actually see an accurate image, whether it's a heat map or statistics, on how your forecheck is on recovering pucks. That's valuable to me as a coach. So when Frank actually got together with a bunch of Russian people and designed this thing, it's like, think about it. Like I was told, think about having a drone going over the ice.
Yeah.
And it's calculating where the puck's going, where the players are on the ice, and it's grouping them together. So it's like a herd mechanism, right, where wow. they are, and then who's on the ice when shots are taken. So it was a broader scope back then. Now it's like doing surgery. They can actually see where the shot came from, who was on the ice when the shot came on net, and there's a goalie, the goalie stat, which is incredible. What do you think a shot from outside home plate has a chance of going in the net with no screen?
I'd say virtually none.
Yeah, so it's under 1%. What is the chance of a shot going in from outside home plate with a screen?
I'd say it's probably 50%.
Well, it goes up to 12. So the goalies are better now, though, when you play.
I'm thinking, they got bigger equipment now.
Yeah.
Wait till Brian Hayward joins this conversation.
Yeah, and they got more coaches. Now they got three coaches instead of one that was part-time.
Absolutely.
Right?
And so 6'4".
Yeah. So that goes up to 12%.
Jeez.
Then where it goes to 38% is when there's an east-west pass through home plate with a screen. It jumps to 38%. So analytics can actually chart that, and they can actually pinpoint who's on the ice. So these expected goals for and expected goals against, they're valuable over time. So as the volume increases, the accuracy increases. So the first four or five games, because no stat standing alone means anything. So
sure.
You got to have a comparative analysis, right?
Yeah.
So as you go through the season, now you got 20 games and 32 teams, your analytical value is compared and it becomes accurate. So to answer a question, I use it in the American League.
Yeah.
And I was sharing it with Pat because my teams, if we're going to say, hey, we're going to play fast, we're going to hunt and attack, we're going to be a possession team, we're going to be tough to play against. Well, that's got to show up analytically.
Right.
Right, I can't say I'm going to do that if we don't hunt pucks down and get them back.
Right.
So if the analytics is showing us that we're getting 38% of puck recoveries, which is a high number in a forecheck, and we're top five in the league, we're doing our job. If analytics has shown us that we're top five team in the league in puck possession, right?
Yep.
Then we're keeping pucks. We're not tossing them away, and we have structure in the O zone. If we're a top five team in suppressing shots at home plate defensively, we're doing a good job keeping people out of home plate. If we're a top five team in taking away scoring chances in front of the net on rebounds, then we're doing a good job eliminating sticks on rebounds. Makes the goalie's job easy. So we've been top five in the league in the American League since, I don't know what it was, 2019.
Yeah. That's awesome. And it's amazing that you're utilizing it as much as you are in the AHL, and that's going to help obviously translate here to the NHL level. Before we let you go, and I appreciate you spending this time with us, because I think we could just sit here and talk afternoon.
Maybe we'll give Pat a run for his money.
My goodness.
And we should have water right here.
We don't have any water.
I can't believe this. Where's the water?
This had to be one of the most attractive jobs in the National Hockey League based on the talent pool that's coming, but I wanted to ask you about the upcoming draft. What excites you the most about getting that number two pick? And, of course, I think there's six picks in the first three rounds for the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, I have, like, this is where my job kind of ends. Like, I don't go into the draft. I mean, I'll go to it, but I don't really scout the players. I've actually, since I knew I was going to get the job, I started reading about the potential draft picks and hearing about historically it's one of the strongest drafts ever. It's exciting, and it goes back to what somebody asked, like, when are these guys ready?
Right.
Like, I keep referring to Chara. Chara was 6'8", 6'9". He was 19, 20, came out of Prince George. And he was not ready to play emotionally. Like, athletically, he was a monster.
Sure.
But emotionally, he had not matured yet to be tough enough to play in that league back then when they had a bunch of, you know, tough guys running around the fourth lines because they were targeting him like he was the wounded wildebeest in the Sahara, right? So he was constantly getting picked at and prodded at, and he didn't really want to do it at that time. So I'm curious what this translates to immediate help.
Yeah.
Like, that's what excites me. Like, everybody's talking about Bedard being the guy, and I've heard nothing but great things about him.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate we didn't get him.
Yeah.
But can we insert a guy from this draft that makes us instantly better? That's exciting.
That excites all of us.
Yes.
Yeah, that excites all of us. Yeah.
Yep.
That's awesome. Well, Greg, congratulations first
Thank
and
you.
Foremost. Welcome to the organization. You know, your honesty and your passion is magnetic, and we appreciate that. Yep. We really look forward to continue this new relationship that we have with you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. Can't wait to get started.
All right. Well, go enjoy the rest of the day if you can. Get some food, and we'll talk to you very soon.
This is an Anaheim Ducks original production on Duckstream.